Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Bill Rock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here this morning. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well. Thank you very much.
Yeah. 40 days, 40 nights. You know what that is?
Yeah, well, it was one guy was wandering around the desert. No,
it was the
rain as well.
Rain, yeah, and for Noah.
No.
And I think we might break it.
I think, really,
it's not continuous.
Wendy was commenting last night, man, what a late summer, early fall this has been, huh?
Well, all our reservoirs upstate, you know, there's a daily report put out by, I think it's Department of Environmental Protection of reservoir capacity.
And usage,
and
too.
It has said overcapacity for 2 months now. All our dams are in very good shape, and they're all safe.
Going to keep the rain away for the Yankees game tonight?
I don't know, but I'm going to be there.
It's your job, are you?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can't go tomorrow night. I've got to go down to Washington for a dinner, human rights. But tonight I'm going to go to the game. To me, it's a lot of fun, beer and popcorn.
You're going to miss the Black Eyed Peas concert.
I am going to miss the Black Eyed Peas. I called my daughter, who works for Robin Hood, and said, I apologize. And she said, well, she'll understand, you know.
But, you can't do it all.
The other daughter's coming to the Yankees game.
There you go.
She's a sports fan, not a Black Eyed Peas
fan.
Well,
the Yankees.
But the Black Eyed Peas are great.
Yeah, the Yankees, I'm sure, are going to be as good as they've been all season long. Against Detroit, they got a tough go, however. Let me see. Where do we want to start here? I talked with the governor on Monday,
okay.
Governor Cuomo, and I asked him about the cab thing
yep.
that seems to be in, not limbo, that's the wrong word,
yeah,
in,
no,
discussion,
pretty,
in discussion.
Coming along.
In discussion. And it was interesting, his response, because he made it perfectly clear to us all that this is something he wants to do for various reasons. You know, one, to help the people of the outer boroughs. Two, because he's got $1 billion, which is going to help the bottom line. And three, it's the right thing to do. But he did say that there was a bunch of problems that needed to be worked out at the moment.
Well, there's lots of different interests. The yellow cab owners are worried about the value of their medallions. Now, let me explain what a medallion is. If you want to have a yellow cab, you have to have this. It's literally a medallion.
It's bolted to the hood.
Bolted to the hood. The city issued them a long time ago, has issued some more over the years. But basically, when you got it, I don't know that anybody then envisioned the fact that you could trade it and it would go up in value, because the city doesn't share in the increase in value. Once it's sold, it's sold, and whoever buys it runs the risk of it going down or going up. They've gone up, and today a medallion sells for $650,000 or something like that, which tells you how lucrative it is to drive own a cab. Now, you have, I think, to justify that, a lot of the cab drivers will have two or three drivers. They might own it themselves and then have other people drive it in other hours, or a company owns it and has all drivers who get paid based on what their fares are, but the owner pays some expenses and gets the whatever's left over. And there is a company, TAXI is the ticker symbol, where you can look and see what the public thinks of the value of the medallions. It is trading at virtually an all-time high. So this argument that if we issue more medallions, the value will go down, the market's telling you, no, they don't think it really will. I think that's just a lot of verbiage to try to see if they can't get a deal and get part of whatever the city's going to sell, but at a discount or something like that. The issue here really is twofold. One, yellow cabs, other than going to LaGuardia and Kennedy, basically do not go outside of Manhattan, and that only below 96th Street. So if you live north of 96th Street or in Queens, Brooklyn, the Bronx, or Staten Island, you just can't get a cab. Part of it, in all fairness, is it's much more spread out than in Manhattan, so the likelihood of you walking out in your street and seeing a cab go by, waving it and jumping in, is a lot less, and that's why the drivers don't go there. But what's grown up to replace that is these, what they call black cabs, these liveries. They technically cannot stop to pick you up. You can't wave them. You have to call them. Truth of the matter is, an awful lot of them do stop. They get waved down at the busier places around train stations and shopping centers in all of the boroughs and north of 96th Street. What the city wants to do is to issue medallions. They would be issued at a lot lower price than the yellow cab ones, because the potential for each car to make a lot of money is probably nowhere near what it is for yellow cab. But they'd be painted a unique color, so you'd recognize them. They would have all of the protections for the public in them that the yellow cabs have now. Right now, if you lose your luggage, you call 311. We'll connect you to the Taxi and Limousine Commission. They'll say, where'd you get picked up? Where'd you drop off? We can track down which cab it is. You call the driver and say the guy left his bag in the back seat, and generally we get it back. And also it gives us the ability to measure how good traffic is, because you can have the computer say, you know, this, the computers do great with lots and lots of data. So if a lot of people go from roughly one intersection to roughly another intersection in the city, in the real world, cab drivers go in different routes and around, there's cars that are stuck and there's potholes and there's digging, kind of digging up. And the real world lets you measure an average of how long it takes to get from one place to another. So there's real value here, and there's other stuff in there. You can use your credit card in the cabs, in the yellow cabs. You would be able to do that in the livery cabs. So all that is good and gets an awful lot of data for and services for the public. The other thing is it would bring in roughly $1 billion for the city. And looking forward, our budget is roughly $5 billion deficit next year, and $5 billion the year after that, and $5 billion the year after that. The economy in New York is doing better than the rest of the country, but we're nowhere back to the 07 levels of tax revenues. And our expenses keep going up because in downtimes, more people use city services. But also there are built-in inflators. The teachers get a 3.5% raise every year. On average, it's a step function some years. Yes, some years no, but basically you can think of it as 3.5% every year. And I'm not opposed to that. I think we should pay our teachers well, and because I think they're delivering a great service. But the bottom line is the city's expenses go up. So what we have for the next 5 years is we had, if you remember, put away $6 billion. We used $4 billion of it this last year to balance the current year's budget. So we only have $2 billion reserve going forward to what's arguably $5, $10, or $15 billion, depending on how deficit. And $1 billion would be a big deal. So this would give us some revenue, and it wouldn't cost the taxpayers 1 cent. If anything, it would give the taxpayers a lot better service.
Now, the governor seems to be very much in favor of it.
I mean, everybody wants to make a fuss about this, but the governor's been on board from day one.
It seems to be one of the issues is the handicapped accessible number of cabs.
Yeah, the issue there is, and it really has little to do with the number of medallions. That has to do more, and people keep confusing things, with the cab of the future, which was selected out of a big competition. The cab that we selected is better for most handicapped people. Easy to get in, easy to get out, more room and that sort of thing. It is not as good for wheelchairs. If you made every cab accessible for wheelchairs, which some people think you do, the trouble is the cost would be much greater. And in the real world, cab drivers very seldom ever get flagged down by somebody in a wheelchair. It's hard for somebody in a wheelchair to get out into the street and wave down a cab. And a lot of the cab drivers, in all fairness, takes a while to load a wheelchair. They don't want to do it, so they just keep going. And so we came up with, I think, what's a better idea, where there'd be a whole bunch of cabs that are wheelchair accessible, which would have medallions that would require them to go. When you call, you'd call, and we could do a better job of getting a cab to come to where you are and pick you up. The first thing sounds nice, but in the streets of Manhattan, and Tom Harkins, a senator, is one of those who just keeps going on about this, and he's right, except that I think he doesn't understand the streets of New York.
One of the things that has been so noticeable for New Yorkers over the past, I think probably it's probably taken 20 years, but all of the curbs have been cut down for those that are in wheelchairs or rolling something down the street. The other thing I understand is that you've just started a program where the street changing, the light changer buttons, and we'll now have noise, and it will also be tactile, so that, again, if you are blind or hard of hearing, you'll be able to, you know, kind of negotiate your way around.
All good ideas. Some of these things cost a lot of money, and so we do it over time, but we're pretty much done. I don't know what the percentage of corners where you have it cut down so the wheelchair can go up and down are, but you know, when I walk around, it looks pretty high. I'll ask Jeanette Sedekon. But over a period of time, we're doing that. And look, it's a complicated city. Lots of people have different special needs. you can accommodate some, and some you just can't accommodate. It's just impractical. Or, for example, it's nice to have every language spoken and available, but you can't have 160 or 180, whatever it is in the city, languages available every single street crossing guard can't be able to speak all those languages.
I can't imagine why not.
But so, you know, there is a limit, although I'm very sympathetic. If you were in a wheelchair, that cut down at the corner would be a big deal. If you were blind, that tactile stuff would be a very big deal. And we have a great commissioner for Office of Disabilities, Matt Saplin, and he is as big an advocate for those with special needs as you possibly can, and we've made a lot of progress. Are you where you'd want to be? No. Can you do more? Yes. Will you ever get to be perfect? No.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let me take care of a little business for the company right here, and also remind everybody that if you've got a question, this is Movie Theme Bumper Music Friday. You did not wear your fedora today like Indiana Jones.
I did not wear my fedora like Indiana Jones.
No. I've seen you, though, in your leather jacket.
I have a nice bomber jacket.
Yeah, you look
at the inside of that. It's all World War II. There's a picture of Betty Grable, I think it is. There's sewn into the lining a lira, so if you get shot down over Italy,
just in case. I don't think they take the lira in Italy.
They don't, although they better be careful. They might have to go back to
that's
lira.
The rumor, exactly. Isn't that interesting?
Actually, it's interesting. Nobody's suggested that Italy should be thrown out of the EU.
Yes, the world market is an unusual one.
It's actually interesting if you think about it. In Europe, Berlusconi and Merkel and Sarkozy are all facing elections or problems, and they've done it. Merkel and Sarkozy in particular have really done a great job in holding Europe together, but they're not that popular at home. Some of these things are difficult. The public doesn't want to spend the money to bail out everybody, and if the consequences would be a lot worse if they don't bail them out. Berlusconi's got his own problems.
EU is an interesting thing, and to have watched how it came together and what they had hoped to do with it. Yet, like we all know, each country has their own sovereign issues.
Yeah, I think my recollection is it started out as to make a common market so that you could go across borders without tariffs, build a bigger market for all of the manufacturers in those countries. Because they always thought they had a disadvantage compared to America. In America, you can sell in all 50 states, and so the market for a product is bigger, and you don't have to customize it for each of the 50 states, and that gives you a competitive advantage. It's easy to do business in America. They didn't have that, so they created this so that they would have that, a bigger market when somebody starts selling a product. That morphed into also common currency and a centralized bureaucracy in Brussels and that sort of thing, which I'm not an economist, and that it may or may not be a good idea, but it is not what it was originally started out to be, and they may be better off for what it is, or they may be worse off. It's clear that there are very big differences in work ethics and efficiencies and government involvement between, you couldn't find two countries more different, I suppose, than Germany and Greece. And that's why pulling it together is hard. And in all fairness to Merkel and to Sarkozy, they were the leading the EU. They have got a very tough job, and they've been doing a good job.
But it is interesting, and I hope that Americans pay at least some attention to it, because where America has the 50 states, we are all, quote-unquote, Americans. We started in this way. Europe did not, and now they're trying to pull it together, and they're having huge difficulties.
Right, and there are people who want to tear America apart. The issue of states' rights versus federalism was fought out starting in 1776 when they had this crazy idea of starting a new country, and everybody said it wouldn't work. It turned out to be the best democracy ever invented, but it certainly has its problems. We had a terrible civil war, if you remember, and even today there are lots of differences of opinion of what is appropriate for the federal government to do and what's appropriate to leave to each individual state.
Would you define yourself as a federalist or as a statist?
Given the movement, given transportation and communications, the days of being able to do things separately are not gone, but it's harder. And so some things I think are appropriate. You know, it's interesting. For example, there are a lot of people who say states should be in charge of everything and the federal government have no say. And then they want to pass a federal law that says every state should be forced to recognize every other state's gun carry laws. So, you know, people go back and forth depending on what they want and where they think they can get it. There's the old adage that where you stand depends on where you sit. And I think in this day and age, and it's invariably it's happened, and nobody's going to roll it back. The federal government plays a much bigger role in.
But I think the argument is it keeps getting larger and larger. Do you see a time where it will be the controlling?
Well, it is
issue?
For all practical purposes. It's pretty hard to argue that the federal government doesn't have an enormously greater impact on what you do than the state governments. Today, the state governments, most of them, depend on an enormous amount of federal monies.
And as soon as you got somebody else paying the freight, they've got the say.
You take the king's shilling, you become the king's man, and that's right. You know, there's some things where you have to have federal, the armies, federal air, FAA.
Banking, I mean, the
CA,
the Fed.
Banking regulations, one of those things. There was lots of state bankings. My girlfriend was former state banking commissioner, and I saw, you know, this was pillow talk, whether it should be state or federal. But in the end, banks have branches all over and do business all over. And so from the bank's point of view, they probably prefer federal regulations simply because you can't have 50 different sets of books. You can't have 50 different sets of regulations. In a practical sense, it's much better. And, for example, education, which is traditionally a states' rights thing, everybody in this country votes in the same election for president, and everybody in this country votes congresspeople and senators who work in the same chambers in Washington and all have the same number, all votes are the same. And so, you know, it is in everybody's interest that everybody get a great education. And if one state says, oh, you know, an eighth grade education is all people need, we don't want to waste our money on more of that, you can make the case that everybody else should have a say in that and say, no, wait a second. You know, you may want to pay for it out of the federal budget rather than the state budget. That's, you could have that discussion. But I would argue that most of the things, not all, but more things than before, and as we go forward, tying people together with transportation and communications. And the real answer, the question you could ask yourself is, well, if that's the case between states, why isn't it the case between continents? Because we're all doing business across the world. That's where I think it's very difficult to foresee that. And I think most people, including me, would say probably a terrible
idea.
For
exactly the example of European Union.
Yeah, when the cultures are so different. The truth of the matter, the cultures throughout the 50 states here are really not that different. Almost all Americans, whether they live on, you know, on a farm or in an inner city, Americans are, because we are a compilation of people from around the world and ideas, and Americans traditionally have been open to accepting new kinds of cuisine and religions and language and processes. America may very well be different. A lot of the countries in Europe don't have that tradition of a lot of change, of having a group of citizens come from all over the world. They've been there for a long time. And you can see European countries struggling with immigration. Unfortunately, so are we. And the sin here is that it's really hurting this country very badly. I gave a speech day before yesterday at Chamber of Commerce in Washington. We're committing, I keep calling it, national suicide. We're sending industries overseas that we need the jobs those industries will create. We need them here. We need entrepreneurs who are starting businesses overseas because they can't get visas here. We need those businesses. We have a very big problem in this country of unemployment. and we've got to do something about it. And immigration is a very big part of that solution.
And at least on the professional end of that conversation, it seems to me that the change to make it more beneficial for us in America is so easy. It's just sitting down and figuring out the numbers of people that you want and who you want and who you might
right.
need
we
more
should
than
be
others.
In char- I mean, it just we should be easy. In charge. The Republicans say we should be in charge of our own borders. Yes, they're 100% right. Keep in mind that the number of people trying to come across the borders has gone down dramatically because the economy in Canada and the economy in Mexico are actually as good, if not better, than the economy in New York. Bombardier, a Canadian company, is going to build a new Learjet. They're going to build it where? In Mexico. And so people aren't coming here for jobs because they have jobs at home and they have a tough time getting jobs here. And also, most of the people that come here overstay visas. They don't come across the border. But yes, we should be in control of our borders, but we also should be bringing in a lot of immigrants, which the Democrats sometimes say no because it'll hurt jobs. No, it will create jobs. That's what you got to do. But that means us picking the people from around the world
Correct.
Who will help us, and that you know you can write that script of the battles of which ethnicities and from what countries. And there is this issue of family reunification as well as the economic issue of creating jobs. And we can have a balance. Right now, I think it's very out of balance. Something like 14% of the visas that we give out are for business, which really means only about 7% because people typically will get their families in. They won't come unless their families can come with them. Surprise, surprise. And that compares to other places in the world where half of the visas or lots and big percentages are for economic reasons. And that you're seeing it right. And we cannot continue, I keep saying this, with so many people unemployed. We have to get them employed. And the ways to do that is small businesses. And the impetus for small businesses is going to come from immigrants and new businesses, new industries. Because the online ones, they have their workforce already. If anything, they're using automation to do more with less. We want people to do more with more. Because companies do more with more because we've got to create jobs.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I've lost complete control of this program, and we have now gone very, very long here. Let me take a break, and we will come right back. Let me remind you before we break, 800-321-0. Movie theme bumper music Friday here on the John Gambling Show. Again, one of the classics, The Godfather.
I remember that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Plays constantly on television. If you wander some of the back channels, it's always on. All right, Mr. Mayor, let's see. Let's talk about Zuccotti Park and the protesters. How do you end that thing?
Well, the protesters are protesting against people who make $40,000 or $50,000 a year and are struggling to make ends meet. That's the bottom line. Those are the people that work on Wall Street or in the finance sector, and most of these companies are no longer on Wall Street. We just use that as a catch-all term. People in this day and age need support for their employers. We need the banks. If the banks don't go out and make loans, we will not come out of our economic problems. We will not have jobs. And so anything we can do to responsibly help the banks do that, encourage them to do that, is what we need. I think we spend much too much time in this country worrying about why we got into problems as opposed to how we go forward. We are worried about why we had mortgage problems as opposed to worried about how we're going to get more people to buy houses and take mortgages. Mortgage rates are at an all-time low, and yet you don't see a lot of new starts in housing, certainly not what we had before. And also, we always tend to blame the wrong people. We blame the banks. They were part of this, but so was Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and Congress and you and me and everybody. Everybody wanted all the boom times. And what happened in 07, 08 is we took too much risk. Invariably, that happens at the end of a cycle, and the economies are always cyclic. There's a quick correction and then a slow build up again. Our problem is the buildup isn't going fast enough. So here we are in 2011 trying to encourage people to take risks and to give mortgages and to take mortgages even if it's a struggle for them to pay the bills. It's exactly the reverse argument. And somebody once said the generals are always fighting the last war. Well, I think sometimes we're fighting the last economic cycle. But, you know, the protest is there. There are lots of people from different who have different interests. The airline pilots union, I'm told, is going down there to protest today. Yeah,
well,
their
they
contract.
They were marching the, what was it, the Continental and the United
Right. There's
group.
a merger there. Right. And, you know, they have a legitimate right to work with their employer and come to a contract. I'm not sure that's one of the things that is a social issue at the time.
Will
if they wanted to,
will you let them stay as long as they want to stay, or is there an end? Is there ultimately an end game?
We'll see. It's you know, people have a right to protest, but we also have to make sure that people who don't want to protest can go down the streets unmolested. We have to make sure that while you have a right to say what you want to say, people who want to say something very different have a right to say that as well. That's what's great about this country. And the right to protest is part of our culture. It's also true that there are other societal concerns. You're worried about sanitation, and you're worried about lots of different, there's lots of laws on the books of what you can do in parks and that sort of thing. It's a private park, but open to the public by the agreement. It was that was made originally in return for being able to change some of their zoning rules. And that'll be worked out with time. You know, I remember in the Vietnam War, there were enormous protests on Wall Street. I've always thought one of the sad things is when the Vietnam vets came back, we didn't treat them the way they deserved to be treated. It was today our armies are volunteers. In those days it was conscription, and they went over, and some didn't come back to protect the very freedoms that we have. And you can say whether you're in favor of the war or against the war. And I guess nobody's in favor of a war, but, you know, you may whether you think it's necessary or not is a better way to phrase it. Our vets deserve the respect and the help when they get back that, you know, I just always thought America's that's what it's about.
Okay, let's see here. Commissioner Kelly, I talked about the capabilities on 60 Minutes last Sunday about shooting down airplanes and stuff. We've been through that. We know the answer. We've heard from you on that as well. But planes obviously are still a major concern. But would you classify them as the major terrorist concern, or are there others on
the
list?
Well, there are plenty of others. From a terrorist point of view, the planes, many of them go overseas where it's the ability to provide security for them.
I would think shipping would be a bigger issue.
Shipping is a very big thing, but and there's a lot of technology used to check and see what's inside those containers, and there's an enormous number of containers that go in and out in this day and age from ports all over the world, and that's a very big problem. And if do you check it overseas, and do you trust the people overseas, which is exactly, Europeans would ask, do you trust Americans? We would ask, do you trust them? Or not, I mean, pick on Europe, just any place in the world. And planes are vulnerable in the sense that, something goes wrong, they can fall out of the sky, whereas something goes wrong and a ship probably doesn't sink unless it's really a big thing. So there's just this different levels of risk, and you have different times to respond, and planes are very visible and ships are not really. But we have a bunch of people around the world who are trying to take away the very values that Americans have, gender equality and religious freedom and freedom of assembly and freedom of speech and all of these things. And you see in some parts of the world, the public standing up and saying, we want those rights that Americans have for ourselves. The trouble is that going from a dictatorship or a monarchy or whatever to a democracy is hard. Even in America, democracy is hard. We have the courts fighting. People are, you know, not happy with Congress in terms of they're not solving the problems, or the president, you know. And these are professionals who are working hard and based on 235 years of history. So to start a new democracy is a tough thing.
All right. Got some folks who want to ask you some questions. Let me take another break right here. And let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. One line open, 800-321-07. Chariots of Fire, running hard, running long. That's what we're up to, and we're running with you right now on Bumper Music, Movie Theme Bumper Music Friday. Let's go to the phones, Mr. Mayor. We're going to start with Peter out on Long Island. Pete, you got the mayor. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Good, Pete. How are you?
Good. The mayor, I just want to refute a couple of your facts. I've been involved in this illegal immigration issue for 6.5 years. I'm a Minuteman. I go down to the border on my own time, my own money. Locally, I've done debates, organized protests. The facts you're spewing about illegal immigration are just way off base. More people are coming here illegally across the border than are overstaying visas. It's about 60% crossing the border illegally, 40% overstaying some sort of visa.
Peter, do you have a question?
Well, no, I wanted to refute his facts.
Okay, like Peter. It used to be you were right, and what's happened because the economy in Mexico is better and the economy here is worse. I think everybody on the border will tell you, there, all the professionals, that there are a lot fewer people trying to come across. Part of that is because the federal government has beefed up border security. They put wall in some places and technology in others. The 11 million undocumented, which is the estimate, probably most people would argue is down to 10 or 9, just because a lot of people, when they can't find jobs, this is not a good place, America, to put your feet up and expect the federal government to take care of you. If anything, the federal government's deported, I think, something like 400,000 people in the last couple of years. I mean, it's interesting, under a Democratic administration, Barack Obama, they've deported an awful lot more people than under the previous Republican president. But the numbers here have been going down, and a lot of the people who come here now, it's just easier to get a visa, fly in and overstay. Why do you want to run the risk of going through the desert? And, you know, you can die doing that, whereas it's probably pretty safe to get through Kennedy Airport. But we do have a big undocumented problem, Pete, and we've got to do something about it. We're not going to deport the 10, 9, 11 million people that are here already. And if we had a sensible policy and good border security, this country would be better off.
All right, Peter, thank you very much. Let me go to Danny in Rockaway. Hello, Danny. You've got the mayor. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Hi. I want to congratulate you and Commissioner Kelly on the NYPD surveillance August cameras. I feel they're on the news a lot. We're catching a lot of criminals with them. I just have one question to ask you. We had money secured by our past assemblywoman here for Rockaway Beach Boulevard and Beach 84th Street, 3 cameras. But there seems to be too much political red tape to get them here. The money is secured, and I'd like to know maybe if you can help us out with this.
These are red light cameras?
No, these are NYPD August cameras. They're surveillance cameras. The ones that
I'll tell you what, if you stay on, we'll get your name and phone number, and I will get you an answer and have somebody call you back and thank you for your call.
Danny is on hold. Let me go to Scott, New Jersey. What's your question for the mayor, Scott?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Thank you. You were very honest about your acknowledgement of government control of livery cabs and that it's a form of taxation and you term it revenue. My question is this. How can you justify the hypocrisy of exactly what must change? The government should not get the proverbial vig on every ride in a cab, so we have better traffic reports and safer luggage. It's contrary to the very development of private business. But because it'll bring the Taxi and Limousine Commission $1 billion, it's okay to not let us citizens figure out which car to get in and not get in?
No. Well, Scott, you have to have some controls in terms of safety, and we just don't want to let 100,000 cabs in the street. They clog traffic, so you have to have a limit. City council or a state legislature, whichever it happens to be, decides how many. The government doesn't get anything for every cab ride other than there are taxes on when you spend money, whether you buy something in the store or in a cab, and there are a variety of different fees and all that sort of stuff. And the cab drivers pay income taxes like everybody else. But you have to have some controls. And incidentally, a lot of all the technology, this is done by the private sector. You know, and the cabs are all private sector. This is not government being out there running the taxi industry the way the government runs mass transit buses and subways. We let the private sector do it. But you have to have some regulation and some limitations. And when the government sells the right to do it, that's money that's going to pay for our cops and our teachers and our firefighters and everything else in this city. It's just another revenue source that we need, because if not that, then you'd have to have higher taxes or fewer cops on the streets, fewer firefighters in the firehouses, and fewer teachers in the classroom.
The ever-increasing revenue need. That is
well,
the
because the public,
act.
Every wants more act. Services. Sure, you pick up the paper, they want more cops, more firefighters, smaller class size, that sort of thing, and better. And it costs money, and somebody's got to pay. Same thing with, you know, we talked about last time the Port Authority. You want new bridges, you want the bridges updated, somebody's got to pay. You can have an argument about who, but somebody's got to pay.
I understand you're marching Sunday?
Pulaski Day Parade, Fifth Avenue. Columbus Day Parade, Staten Island.
There you go. Get your shoes out.
I'm looking forward
have
to it.
Have fun.
These parades are fun.
Yeah, I know you like them. We'll see you next Friday, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much. Coming up in our next hour, we're going to flip it upside down. We're going to go to Hollywood.